And 3, 2, 1. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Sovereign Envoys. I'm going to go now and leave you with Red Templar, Theory QED, and Virgil. This is the third in a row that we're recording, so I got some stuff to do. But I believe Theory QED and Virgil and Red Templar want to discuss pure evil with you. All right, I'll let you guys to it, and just let me know in the timestamp. Cheers.
All right.
Okay, bye.
Cheers. Cheers.
So, Virgil, why did you think that this is important to bring up? I mean, where did this thought of what is evil come from? Was it about the consciousness debate, or I guess ET having different motivations from us and something like that?
That's a great question. I think it ties into both, but I'm going to maybe start with the latter, the second point you mentioned. And that is, you know, kind of touching on some of the discussions with or about or from, you know, Tom DeLonge and others that are associated with TTSA, you know, talking about, you know, this faction that may possibly exist within the government, talking about the phenomena, and that is you know, some folks that may within the government view this phenomena as being evil. And what is evil? And I was thinking about this quite a bit, and you know, like, what is evil? And you kind of, you know, if you unpack that, there's a lot of obviously religious overtones to that term, but what is evil other than, you know, a
subset of beliefs?
Well, or a lack of any value of humanity or humans, right? And I was thinking about this kind of, I guess, in the or through the lens of, you know, what we have been talking about earlier about, you know, this idea that aliens or some sort of extraterrestrial intelligence being truly alien or not in any way connected to what we as people think of as humanity, and a entity that is completely disconnected from humanity, not imparting any particular importance to us, to humans. And that's not to say that they're like evil with like intention, but just they're like truly ambivalent or uncaring of us as individuals over any other, you know, any other being or life. Like, and I guess the example that I've thought about is, you know, the way people think about something like ants. I mean, we, you know, don't have any particular, I mean, you don't hate ants, but you don't particularly care about ants. And so, you know, is that true? I mean, if you were going to, like, again, use that term, like, what is evil? That ambivalence towards another entity or being, is that, could that be characterized as, in some way, being evil? And that's kind of, you know, where I was going with initially bringing this up, is, you know, this idea that, you know, some being completely disconnected from humanity, not caring about humanity, and is that evil? Is that what we would consider, you know, somehow dark? And it's interesting because when you talk about like religion in general, or, you know, humans' concept of good and bad, you know, is what we're really saying when we talk about evil, is it really just people or things or intention that doesn't care about other people? And what does that mean vis-a-vis, you know, some other being? Anyway, that's what I was thinking about when I brought it up.
I agree. And it could be that it's like ants and aliens. There could be that big of a gap in terms of cognitive abilities, technological capabilities. Or the thing that I always think about when with regards to this topic is that picture of a backhoe where actually it's a video where an orangutan in the Amazon rainforest, I think, is attacking a backhoe that is taking down its habitat. And it's just so futile, that resistance. And he understands what's going on. He's attacking the machine that is destroying his home, but he has no chance at winning that fight. And I forget how it ends. I think he gets tranquilized or something like that, and maybe just shot. I don't know. But I always think of that. And is that scenario, are we being evil to that life form? Is that an evil intention? Is that an evil action? Because ultimately, we're destroying his home. We're ending his life. We're killing him and all of his, you know, friends and family just because we want palm oil or whatever it is. We want to make Nutella.
Yep.
So if aliens kill every human on Earth because they need alien Nutella, is that inherently evil or is it the way the universe works? Is that the natural order of things and how life functions? I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, what's that commercial? Happy cows make better milk or something like that?
Yeah.
I mean, it might be a very human-centric idea even just asking the question, is it evil? I mean, we don't have a whole lot of pity. I mean, some of us do, like for our food, animals, and whatnot. But honestly, we don't really mind that we slaughter like hundreds of, you know, thousands of cows and whatever
hundreds a year. Hundreds of millions or
billions. I mean, just it's astronomical numbers. But I mean, they're delicious. I mean, that's the problem. And so, I mean, it's but hard for us
care.
To... Yeah, exactly. I mean, and it might be the fact that, hey, maybe we have a purpose, but we unfortunately don't know any of that. So all we can do is kind of.
Exactly, Templar. So extrapolating that thought process or mentality towards, you know, another being looking at humans that, you know, again, as I said, sort of is ambivalent towards humanity, is that ambivalence, could we characterize that as evil? Like, let's say we were tasty to this the others, right? I mean, it, no different than us in relation to, like you had described, you know, cows. I mean, are we evil in destroying, annihilating, you know, tens or hundreds of millions of cattle a year? Any more than another entity would be evil in destroying or annihilating tens or hundreds of millions of humans a year? It's interesting. Like, what is, again, back to, you know, I guess my original sort of question to this group is, what is evil? I mean, we have all this dogma and baggage associated with it that it's like demons and devils and other things, but at its root, is it an ambivalence towards the innate value of humanity, and what does that mean, again, sort of vis-a-vis, you know, a entity that is distinct or separate from humanity? And it's interesting. I mean, and I bring it back to, you know, some of the, again, some of the reporting, some of the comments made by folks that are associated with the, well, I guess the phenomena and this overall disclosure movement, you know, when they talk about, you know, some factions within government, you know, trying to describe, you know, are the beings good or are they evil? And one thing that, you know, kind of strikes me is a lot of people, at least for me, I've heard, is that, you know, past his prologue and the fact that there's been no evidence, let's say, of, you know, annihilation, if that somehow means that there's that the beings are benevolent or instead maybe is that just that they're ambivalent. You know, they're we haven't been destroyed not because there's some sort of virtuous intent, but maybe just because, you know, we're not a threat, we're nothing. And it's for me at least, it's kind of sobering to think about. What do you think, Templar?
No, I'm pretty much on the same wavelength on that. I mean, it's a little just like unfortunate that there's so many intelligent animals that we eat too. Like, I mean, pigs and cephalopods are, you know, we eat lots of them and they're proven intelligent and we don't have any qualms whatsoever.
None. Zero. So,
and we don't ever think of ourselves as evil for doing it or growing them and.
But Templar, you wouldn't say that we're killing and eating the, you know, the pigs and the cephalopods because we hate them, because we're you know, seeking their destruction. It's just we don't really care, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So I think the problem here, or at least the complicating factor, is that human morality is usually subjective. So we justify killing these animals because we say their suffering is less important than the human suffering that would occur if we didn't have them. So you can say that killing a cow is wrong, but if by not killing that cow, you have human suffering, either malnutrition or no access to affordable protein, or people die because they're starving, we say that that is more important than the cow's life. And if that logic applies to the other beings, then we are going to be seen as less important as well. But hopefully it won't.
Hopefully. And I don't mean this to be disagreeable, but just to challenge that point. I mean, does this group think about what you described? Like, when you eat a steak, are you thinking to yourself that eating the steak is the better of two scenarios, you know, that your continued livelihood supersedes any detriment to the cow that you're eating? I would suggest or submit that we don't even think about that. Like, it doesn't even come into our consciousness. You just eat the steak.
I have thought about it before, but usually I don't. Yeah, you're right.
And I think
it's becoming more of a thought for me. Like, with the Impossible Meats and those stuff coming out, they're getting very close. And I've, you know, told my family a few times, like, if it gets to the point where I can cook our dinners and there's not a huge difference where the kids will actually eat it, I would be more than happy to start switching over. Just because, like, when I was growing up, we had cows. And they're dumb. I mean, they're dumb as a box of rocks. But they are some of the sweetest animals, you know? I mean, it's like, hey, human, I love you for no good reason. I mean, in fact, quite the opposite. They should have no reason to love us. But, I mean, it's, there's a little bit of guilt there. Same thing with pigs, you know what I mean? They're intelligent, but they're delicious. But if we can do something...
They are delicious.
If we can do something that takes away the need to do that and still get the, you know, savory treats we're looking for, I'm all for it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I'm just curious if you, you know, for me at least, detach myself from, you know, the desiring of the savory treats like you had described. I mean, in looking in on humanity, killing all of these different types of animals to eat. Like, what would you think? What if you came to Earth and you were like, okay, 9, 8, 7 billion people have, you know, 4 or 5 billion cows and 3 or 4 billion pigs and sheep and and we're growing them to eat them. Like, what would you think about humanity? You know?
Yeah, but it's possible that they would think that we haven't developed lab grown meat yet, because that could be a potential game changer, where if you just have a vial, you can literally grow like an Olympic swimming pool full of meat stem cells.
That's true. But what if back to your point earlier about consciousness, what if consciousness was considered the, I don't know, the underlying most important facet of all life in the galaxy, and you came to Earth, you saw, you know, this massive population just basically growing other conscious beings just to slaughter and kill them. Like, what would you think of that?
That it depends. That... Are they herbivores or omnivores or carnivores? I mean, I think they would probably be omnivores with eyes in the front, and that's because they would be more likely to be able to manipulate their environment rather than a herbivore that would have Yeah.
But what if the plants, what if plants are conscious? What if there's no difference, in fact, between cows and plants?
Like we're talking about. So what do you want us to eat then?
I know. Exactly. I agree, but it's just, I don't know. I would hope that, you know,
it's complicated.
It's complicated. It you're right.
But I just hope that their understanding of morality, hopefully an objective universal morality, will be so much further advanced than us that they'll be at least understanding of our shortcomings and also just benevolent. Because I think morality really rests upon the shoulders of things like psychology, emotions, interconnectedness and cooperation between humans. I think it's a very complex thing that has a lot of inputs, but if their understanding of each input is so much greater than ours, they might be able to synthesize all of those things and figure out what is inherently evil and what is, like, objectively, not as a matter of opinion or cultural relativism or anything like that. They can say that this action is objectively wrong because it harms an animal and it's unnecessary, something like that. So if they can,
I would hope so. I would absolutely hope so. But then I'm thinking about, like, some of the, you know, comments and statements that, you know, people like Tom DeLonge have made, where he's alluded to, you know, these beings, or there being multiple beings, other multiple intelligent beings that have interacted with humans, and some of them are, I think, how did he describe them? As bugs, as not inherently looking towards or after the benefit of mankind, that even perhaps, you know, actively trying to cause discord amongst humanity. I mean, does this ring a bell? I mean, are you guys both sort of following some of the I guess discussions that I'm referring to? Because there has been, I mean, initially in the Coast to Coast, and
gosh, I think he said they're demonic.
Yeah, I think it was in the Fade to Black, the Jim Church interview that he'd had. This was in years leading up to, prior to the 2017 announcement of the Nimitz videos, and it seems like he's gotten, and you can speculate as to why this is, but he's not gotten into all this woo-woo stuff. But earlier on, before some of those revelations came, he did speak about, you know, these, you know, this information that he had gotten, that, you know, beings were actively subverting humanity.
My
question is, why?
I don't know. Just for fun, I guess. I mean, what does demonic even mean? Doesn't it mean, like, just torturing people for your own enjoyment or something?
It goes back to that what I was saying earlier about what is evil. I mean, we have all this baggage associated with what demonic and what evil is, but what if it's really just they don't give a shit about humanity?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it even could be a kind of deal like, let's wrap it in a Star Trek kind of universe. I mean, let's say humans do get out into the stars and we get into a place where, hey, we can go pretty much anywhere. There's lots of humans. We're spread out throughout the galaxy. I mean, if there's a planet we're observing and waiting for it to hit a benchmark, I mean, and it's going to be a few thousand years, there's probably going to be humans that are going to go there and just screw with the people, or, you know, the indigenous population, because there are just people like that. You know what I mean? I mean, heck, even on the planet we have so many trolls and people who just want to, you know, mess with things or just want to see the world burn down or whatnot, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So even if they were mostly good or have a set of rules that they have to follow for their galactic community or whatnot, I mean, there's always going to be idiots who just want to, you know, screw with the system.
That's true. And I'm thinking back to that Fade to Black interview that Tom DeLonge had had with Jimmy Church. And I think he had, one of the things he was sort of alluding to or saying was that, you know, these beings existed kind of almost as a hive mind, and that they worship their own technology. And I wonder, I'm thinking about that kind of along what you had just said, Templar, of, you know, kind of what you had described for me, at least, sort of, you know, it would indicate a certain individual intent. Like, there are these assholes you know, beings that want to just troll humanity. But what if, I mean, if it truly was sort of a collective, and they were ambivalent towards humanity, I mean, is it possible that the entire group, the whole, doesn't care and is involved in some of you know, what I described, or is it more of like what you had said, like there's individuals that are bad apples, let's say, that, you know, want to go out and cause trouble?
I mean, it's plausible one way or the other. I mean, if it is, you know, a whole species that's out to mess with us, they're doing a piss poor job of it. I mean, it seems like if there's a species that's that far ahead of where we are, I mean, and they really did want to just,
that's a good
point, you know, annihilate us or whatnot. I mean, we already got into the, if you have a ship that goes that fast, just fly a few of them into populated areas, or
that's a good point.
Ocean.
And
if, right?
It's an excellent point. And if I remember correctly in the interview, the recording, it was stated that, you know, like religion was one of the divisive things that was being sort of foisted upon humanity that caused, you know, innumerable, you know, number of deaths and destruction across, you know, different cultures, different races. And I guess, you know, thinking about that, it kind of leads me to, I guess, wonder, like you had said, if the intent truly was to just eliminate, let's say, the human race, it seems like there would be a lot more efficient ways to do that than just, especially for a highly technologically advanced civilization, as opposed to just trying to basically kind of start crap between different groups of humans, right?
Well, I agree with all of that, but I've also heard it suggested that maybe they really do want to just watch us fight. That they enjoy it.
But why?
I don't know. The only thing I can think about is humans do cockfighting and dogfighting and stuff like that. So it could be like it's just fun for them to see which country wins the next war, something like that. But I really don't believe in that theory at all. And I also don't believe that religion was given to us or foisted upon us by some other intelligence. I think it's just basic human nature. We want to understand the universe. We want to have rules that everyone abides by that keep society functioning, whether it's, I don't know, the bad rules like stoning women or some of the nicer rules that aren't about oppressing women, but and hating gays and all that stupid stuff. But I think it really is just our fault that we made religions and that we made it so restrictive and that we made them so hateful, because it's human tendency to have tribalism and to hate other groups that are not in the same group as us. I don't think that that's evidence of anything that ET has done. I think religion is just a bad aspect of it.
You're right. And I think, and I want to use my words carefully, because maybe I shouldn't have said foisted, because
no,
I
it's
think,
just speculation. You know, it's okay.
Absolutely. But I think in that actual interview, what he was stating was that religion sort of manifested out of these different almost paranormal encounters. I mean, this whole cargo cult sort of idea that, you know, beings would exhibit some sort of, you know, there would be these like almost supernatural sort of experiences, and that would result religion. And I think, if I remember correctly, in the interaction or the interview, the Tom DeLonge was saying that, you know, if they must have had some sort of knowledge or foreknowledge that this would, religion would happen as a result of, you know, things flying around, lights possibly coming down, and bushes burning. But if that was the case, why not just tell everybody? Why have these pockets that would eventually sort of, you know, end up fighting with each other?
Why have
I gotta throw something in here, like related to all this. It's, or maybe completely not related. So the one of the things that stood out to me about the army, like, one, and I think I mentioned this in one of our previous podcasts earlier in the evening, like the whole time metric
engineering. Yep.
Okay. So that, I mean, where does all that kind of fit into this too? Like, I mean, if we are going to go with religion may have had some trueness in it, like there's a whole lot of prophecy stuff that is in the Bible that could be construed as occurring after its original prophecy, and some upcoming that, you know, if we are going to give a little credence to religion, doesn't sound super great. You know what I mean? Like revelations kind of stuff. But I don't know. Not necessarily saying any of that's, you know, giving a whole lot of credit to that, but
so your question is, what does space-time metric engineering have to do with,
you know, any of this? Biblical
prophecy?
Or just any of this in general?
Well, I, for me at least, I think when we talk about, you know, again, space-time metric engineering, you know, quantum fluctuations, we're talking about specific technology that would allow for things like, you know, warp drives and faster than life, or excuse me, faster than light travel. And so that's kind of the technical maybe explanation for how you have these zero inertia craft that, you know, defy the laws of, you know, traditional, you know, gas dynamic propulsion. But I think that's sort of maybe an explanation for the observations, whereas you know, the latter kind of, you know, area that you touched on is more on the, you know, spiritual or the human implications to maybe, you know, people observing basically magic, because that's kind of what we're talking about. I mean, things that can travel faster than the speed of light or float around, exhibit anti-gravity. I mean, those are kinds of things that for most people, I think they would consider to be completely out of this world. Anyway.
So I think what you were talking about, Virgil, about they must know that there is going to be religion that comes out of these experiences, that could be true, but I think it's still a question of, did they want to create multiple different religions, as you said, to, I don't know, make us all compete with each other and fight with each other? Or was the religion just a byproduct of human nature seeing UFOs? So was it really angels or something like angels, interdimensional beings, that told them to write the Bible and told them to be religious? Or did they just see a UFO and then 3,000 years ago, the only way that they could explain that is with fairy tales and stories, and that's how we got these different religions.
It's a great question.
And that goes to all mythologies, like even Zeus and all of those things.
It's a great question. I totally don't have the answer to it. I think that I honestly have no idea if it was because what I kind of, you know, what I'm taking from the question is, was there in initial intent to you know, create religion or the creation of religion, at least for humans, after observing some of this phenomena sort of secondary or result of the observations? And I have no idea. I do think, I mean, thinking about it, I mean, again, and this is complete, I don't feel particularly strongly one way or the other, but, you know, this idea of cargo cult religions, I wonder if that may not have at least had some sort of, you know, bearing or played some sort of role. But again, I have no idea. It's a great question, though.
It's fun to speculate on,
Templar.
I think it's fun to speculate on this, and it's unfortunate we'll probably never get any answers to any of these ones. we're just too far off the beaten or off the beaten path for some of these. You know what I mean?
Did
mess with us, we'll probably never know, unless they have, like, I mean, there would have to be some crazy disclosures that have to come out that, and I doubt that anyone would have any useful purpose in revealing that kind of information.
Templar, what I was thinking about actually today, in fact, is so, and this is sort of generalizing things a bit, but you have, you know, the world and all these different, you know, kind of bespoke sort of siloed civilizations, cultures that exist. And here we have all of these different religions. There's, Hinduism, Judaism, you know, Christianity comes up, you know, Islam, there's what's going on, you know, kind of the Native American, you know, earlier on, even there's like Sumerian and Babylonian, you know, cultures and religions that sprout out. And I guess looking at all, so there's a lot, right? There's a lot of different, there is no single religion. It's difficult for you as a outsider looking at all these different, you know, faiths and belief systems to say this one is definitively the correct one, right? But if you look across all of those, what are the common themes? What's the common thread that exists across all of those? In some cases, across many of those different belief systems, there may exist some sort of documented historical event. I mean, one thing that comes to mind is this idea of a great flood, right? So maybe there's truth. That's the common thread that exists. Now, look at, you know, Judaism or Sumerian, you know, belief systems. They attribute different reasons for why the flood happened, like, you know, what role it played in their broader sort of pantheon of, you know, religiosity. But the fact is, across many, if not all of those different belief systems, there's an event that had occurred. And I wonder if there's some other, when you look at other beliefs that are held across all those different groups, if there is some other common threads that may exist. And if you really start looking kind of holistically at all of it, if there are some common truths that maybe, and when I say truths, I don't mean necessarily like spiritual truths, but just some sort of events or viewpoints that are consistent across all of them that would tie back to some sort of consistent, I don't know, experience that all of them had. And maybe, again, and I'm just completely speculating, but if we are talking about like some sort of cargo cult, like, right, like people see something extraordinary, you know, 1,000 years, 10,000 years, 20,000 years ago, and they see that extraordinary event and they attribute some sort of mythological explanation to it, if those commonalities are indicative of that thing that was either observed or potentially maybe communicated consistently across all the different groups, right? Like, is human life important? Is life important? That seems to me at least a common theme. Now, if you look across Judaism and Islam, again, Christianity and Hinduism, you know, there's different, you know, life is consistently considered important, but each one of those groups has different criteria for, you know, exactly how that life is considered important or what constitutes, you know, important, so, you know, life, right? But still, there seems to be some sort of a, hey, things that are alive are, it may be that like certain fish that have scales are more important, less important than fish that don't have scales or
cows. I just want to say you guys are doing an amazing show without me, so I'm not even gonna I'm just gonna stay out and listen.
Get out of here, Gabe.
No, you guys are doing really good. I'm really impressed. I'm like, oh my god, I get to listen to an awesome podcast. You guys are fucking amazing.
Anyway, I'm just kind of rambling on, but I wonder again,
seriously,
if there are some sort of common themes across these the religiosity that exists within human culture,
and maybe what?
Go ahead.
Okay, well, so I agree with you that we should look for these commonalities, and it might be evidence of some shared truth. Like, I agree that the flood is probably a real event, and mm-hmm. I think that we can prove that by not only all of these stories from cultures around the world and religious stories, but also by the geological evidence. But in other cases, I think it's a much harder thing to prove that it was based on real events. So, for example, you mentioned that all life is important. That could be a product of someone telling us that we need to make a religion that says that all life is important and we need mm-hmm. to respect it. Mm-hmm. Or that, in my opinion, I'm not religious. I think that could be basic human nature. Why? Not because we care about life and think it's cute and think it's inherently valuable, but because it serves our need. So if all life disappears, we disappear as well. So yeah. Even in Native American cultures where you don't necessarily have organized religion per se, you still respect life and revere life. I think this is also the same in Shinto in Japan, but you need to respect life and make sure that it sticks around because we need it for our continued survival. So it doesn't seem like it needs to be an outside concept that was given to them to write it down. It might just be something that's inherently obvious and you need to teach the younger kids that in a
No, you're absolutely and then another right. commonality.
Yeah, sorry. And then another commonality is the idea of the afterlife. And you could say that if all of these religions around the world have this same concept of heaven or some kind of peace after death, you could say that it's based in fact. Somebody must have told them that. But I don't think that that's a conclusion that we can draw for the simple reason that A, nobody can prove that, and B, it's just comforting. You're not going to join a religion that says that everyone is just ceases to exist and nothing happens after death because that's scary and depressing. And you're not going to join that says everyone's going to be eternal torture because why would you want to believe that? Everyone wants to believe that they're going to be peaceful and with their loved ones and happy for eternity after death. It's just a natural thing that religions use.
It's comforting. Basically,
yeah, it's comforting. Yep. So I think it could just be human nature once again.
No, that you're spot on. You're absolutely right.
Hey guys.
I would agree with all of that. What was interesting, or what I was thinking, one of the things I was thinking about was, you know, we talk about some sort of significantly technologically advanced intelligence, you know, interfacing with or interacting with humanity, and how humans would view that entity, the other, as potentially being godlike. And I'm curious, like, if that were to, you know, happen, if that was become very or had became very obvious, if people wouldn't naturally gravitate towards worshiping that being just out of sheer belief that what they were observing was, well, godlike, right?
But my biggest problem with that theory or that idea is, why has that not happened in recent times? I mean, the most recent religion that I can think of is Mormonism, and even that gets made fun of and it's, you know, ridiculed by some people. Man. So why is there not a religion that started 20 years ago or 10 years ago? Why do people not meet God in present day, but they met them so often in the past?
But what would happen if, okay, so I'm going to sort of edit here.
I'm very anti-religion.
I'm not disagreeing with that, but I'm just curious. I'm just thinking, like, okay, so we have these reports, you know, this video, some of this evidence around these craft, right? Tic Tac, Gimbal, Go Fast. What if that really all of a sudden blew up and everyone was seeing that, and we were seeing these things flying around that we determined had come from outside of our solar system that could travel faster than light, defy the laws of gravity? Would people look at those things, whatever is inside of them, as being, you know, godlike? Like, what other technology or capabilities would they inherently have, and would we attribute some sort of, you know, supernatural, maybe perhaps, capability to them just by virtue of the fact that they can do things that frankly are magic to us today?
I mean, that is the cargo cults. That is a recent religion that popped up.
Templar.
Like, yeah, I mean, it's
exactly it. That's exactly right.
From the World War II bombers?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Primitive people seeing planes flying in the sky dropping food. Yeah. I mean, what happens if you see
bring riches flying from the sky?
flying around, you know, faster than light and whatever other crazy free energy, you know, space-time metric engineering, to go back to that point earlier. I mean, this is all crazy stuff.
So I definitely agree with you that it's possible that they saw UFOs and somehow they got religion out of that experience. I totally see that as a possibility. But what I'm saying is, I think it might just be their interpretation. So this idea gets thrown around a lot where it was angels and demons, and now it's UFOs and whatever else. And then in the future, it might be interdimensional holograms or something that has to do with it might be our current. Yeah, yes. It might be our current understanding of the phenomena.
I agree.
I
think we're in violent, maybe not violent, but violent disagreement or agreement. Excuse me. I'm 100% with you. I wonder, just for the I think you had used the term the normies, if upon encountering or observing something, you know, mind-blowing, if you wouldn't see them then associate some sort of religiosity with what they have encountered is all. Like, yeah. Maybe it happens again. Just like you had said, like, you don't disagree that, you know, some sort of experience could have precipitated the creation of certain, you know, religions, if that might not happen again in the future when people start seeing stuff that's completely extraordinary or out of this world.
Exactly. I'm just saying I've never seen someone that claims that God came down and gave them a message in the last 100 years. I mean, it just doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you can say he only comes like once or twice or whatever, but like, I don't know, why does Jesus not come back around if he's like the savior of everyone? I just don't think that religion needs to continue in our current society.
I'm just suggesting that religion might become a big thing if people start seeing some really extraordinary things start happening around them. People
definitely might, because yeah. As you were saying, if everyone freaks out that aliens are coming, everyone's going to be religious in a heartbeat. I'm going to start believing in heaven right away.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, we were even talking earlier in our conversation here about where we were talking about, you know, what you could do to summon one to you. I mean, how is that different from praying? I mean, if we're going to go with a lot of the stuff that we're talking about may have a, I don't know how you want to put a supernatural spin to it. I mean, aren't we kind of talking about religious under a different name?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And this is where I was thinking, you know, if aliens, you know, massively showed up tomorrow, right? They're all zipping around, you know, flying in from, you know, hundreds or thousands of light years away, a million years more advanced than us. I mean, that's basically God exists. Now, it might not be, you know, this interpretation that we have in Western society of God, but, you know, I think I use the term God with a lowercase g. I mean, magic is real. People travel faster than light and float around and can read our minds and cure cancer. And like it kind of throws everything up in the air. Like I said, magic is real, at least from our point of view. Granted, as you said, you know, obviously there's some sort of basis into whatever, you know, things we're observing from you know, want to say science perspective, and it can be explained. But for the folks that can explain it, it's like it literally is like going back, you know, 2,000 years and showing someone an iPad with a video. They're gonna think it's freaking witchcraft. It's like it's they won't be able to wrap their heads around it, at least not initially.
You make great points, and any sufficiently advanced technology will be indistinguishable from magic. So I agree I agree that people really would worship the aliens. I mean, whether it's like bowing down, trying to appease them, monetary bribes, whatever, mm-hmm. or even praying to them for mm-hmm. mercy. It already is a religion in the sense that we believe in UFOs and we feel attacked when people attack our ideas. The UFO community is already very much like a religion, but if aliens suddenly showed up, it would be like that times 1,000. And in a strictly non-religious sense, I would also, I guess you could say, worship the aliens just if for no other reason, just in reverence of their technology and their increased understanding of the universe from us. In a scientific capacity, I would ask them all sorts of questions about psychology, philosophy, morality, the origin of life and how it spreads. I mean, it would really be, as you said, like talking to God.
Yeah. It's pretty wild.
Yeah. So, Templar, did you have any topics that you wanted to talk about?
Oh, man, we've been talking for 3 hours. I'm ready to go to bed.
Oh, it's like
1 in the morning.
Yeah, exactly. It's got to be late for you guys. So, Should we try to wrap this up? I wonder if Gabe is listening. Virgil, do you want to keep going? I'm good to keep going. It's only 2 p.m. for me, so.
Yeah, I'm good for another maybe 20 minutes. It's about 10.
12 about 10 hours right longer.
12 hours. Is this a marathon? This is a marathon session.
Yeah, we're basically giving the whole season of shows right now.
Yeah, exactly. I won't be recording for another decade.
Yeah. So do you want to keep going about the religion idea?
Yeah, maybe. I'm thinking about all the news about the Army, the TTSA news, the fact that actually, and Templar was mentioning, you know, he had mentioned this whole, it sounds goofy, but space-time metric engineering, but, you know, basically this whole, I mean, if, and it's a big if, but if the, you know, these metamaterials that we talk about are able, you know, to somehow become inertia-less, or, you know, I mean, that would be completely ridiculous and crazy. And I'm just thinking about those patents that the U.S. Navy has recently issued for, I think, compact fusion reactor and, what is it, inertial, you know, mass, you know, reduction device. I mean, if this is true, and it's a big if, right? And you can say it's like disinformation, it's bullshit, it's they're just trying to freak out the Chinese or whatever. But if it does exist, I mean, the next 5 years or
gonna whatever, be bonkers.
It's gonna be bonkers. It's gonna be, I mean, basically, science fiction is real. You know, magic exists. We're going to be, like, flying around. It's crazy. And it's kind of exciting, though, because I think back, like, 120 years ago, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, people were, like, you know, getting around on horse-drawn carriages, on horseback, and then all of a sudden, you know, within 40 years or 50 years, they're flying to the moon. You know, I mean, we might be seeing something as radical, or if not more radical than that.
Well, I mean, just think.
Yeah, go.
Just think if we only took care of the power problems. If the only thing that came out of this was a compact, for all intents and purposes, endless power supply. I mean, we would be able to tackle problems then. I mean, it'd take a lot of power from the Saudis and a lot of the other countries that are basically doing power plays and keeping people down.
If the reverse happened, we'd be up shit creek without a paddle. We'd have, like, a thing that can float masslessly, but we'd need an infinite amount of energy we can never produce. So if it's, like, one way, we, like, save the world. The other way, we just make some fucking buddy richer. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kind of sucks.
Theoretical.
Well, it is interesting to think about what free energy could do to, you know, society. Personally, I think that, you know, there's a lot of talk in the news and just generally about climate change. I think that personally, and you guys might disagree, but I think that we've passed the. I mean. There's climate change is already happening. There's, like, we can ban straws and do all sorts of other different things, but we're already going to pass, like, 600 parts per million. We're on that trajectory. It's not a matter of if, it's just how we mitigate it. And I think that something like free energy, if we were to, you know, identify or implement that would help us in. You know,
what if it wasn't free, but, like, say, like, you were just holding up the infrastructure, so it was like minus 50. What if everybody had 50 extra dollars a month? You know what that would do for the economy? That would be crazy.
First of all of your emissions would go away instantly because you have clean fusion or whatever it is.
Wow, we never said it was clean.
All right, well, we don't know after that.
Yeah.
You could use that free energy power to do carbon sequestering and suck CO2 out of the air, so you could literally do whatever you want and reverse global warming almost instantly.
Yeah, exactly. Well, maybe not instantly, but you could.
Well,
you,
yeah.
We could at least, like a, you know, if
a generation.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so I think that, you know, our climate change is going to happen. There's no, maybe there's some things we could try to do with our existing technology to try and, you know, kind of try and minimize some of the changes, but it's going to happen. It's already baked into the system.
If yeah.
we wanted to truly prevent climate change or
well, I guess...
4 degrees, 5 degrees, 6 degrees centigrade you know, change in temperature, we would have had to have done that back in the '80s and nineties.
I guess with that kind of power and that kind of control over the environment, we would be getting like that much closer to terraforming.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Sure.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I think you're talking about how things are going to get crazy, and you gave the examples of how we went from, oh, powered flight is completely impossible, humans will never fly, and then, you know, 60, 70 years later, we have 747s flying to every city in the world, and we put a man on the moon. So already, technology is moving at a crazy pace, but even more so with modern technology like computers and the internet. But what's really going to be the game changer is if we ever get a super intelligent artificial intelligence, or AGI, because it could be as much as a million times smarter than a human. And once it can teach itself, its intelligence increases exponentially. So it might take 3 months to get to the level of human intelligence, and then after that, 1 month to get 100 times that, and then after that, a week to get 1,000 times that. So it'll be a very fast progression, and then that computer technology or conscious robot being or whatever, it can do so many things that we can't even imagine now. It can ask the questions, it can run the simulations, it can answer its own questions.
It doesn't have to sleep.
I don't think so, but I think it'll basically
be what I mean, it doesn't have to sleep.
I don't think so,
like anything, but even if you had human level intelligence, but if you had a worker that didn't get tired.
And so that's another good point too, is once we have that AGI or free energy, we can have these robots that do all of our labor for us. So food production, food transport, food preparation, food delivery. So humans are no longer needed.
But you need the free energy for that. Otherwise, the robots are going to cost energy.
My question is, is that a common evolutionary path for intelligence?
AI?
I mean,
I see where you're going with this.
Like biology is
made to make that.
Yeah, it's bootstrapping, the non-biological intelligence. And what if that's common? And what if what we're talking about when we talk about extraterrestrial intelligence is, in fact, actually non-biological and artificial intelligence? What if this is a common mode that other, biologies go through? Like, what if what we're seeing with Nimitz and some of these observations is in fact actually that artificial intelligence, just not artificial intelligence originating from planet Earth.
I think that's almost inevitable for two reasons, or maybe more than two reasons. One, technology, always the goal of technology is to make our lives easier. So humans do less work, or we do work more efficiently. So at a certain point, we're going to have robots do all of our work. And then what do? Then we can study or play and just use leisure time however we want. But the second reason is like transhumanism. So if you're going to die or you're sick, what do? You go to the doctor and they give you an artificial heart or a pacemaker or whatever it is. So we already fix ourselves with robots. Robots are going to start doing the surgeries later. And then it can also come the other way. So it could be we upload our intelligence into a machine, maybe at the end of our life or maybe at the start of our life. I don't know, because we don't want to have all the problems with being biological. Like we don't want to have to poop. We don't want to have to go to the bathroom. We don't want periods. And we don't need that anymore. So we've evolved beyond that. And we don't want to deal with those nuisances of getting sick, of getting cancer. So we could go from putting our intelligence into the machine, or the machine could go into us with a neural lace. So we have a central AGI, and then all biological life has the neural lace in our brain, and we become this sort of hive mind where the machine goes into us.
Who was talking about Matilda L. McElroy or Donald O. McElroy earlier, the alien interview story?
Hey, I'm gonna drop right now. But hey, this was a ton of fun, and I'll catch you guys probably tomorrow.
Yeah.
And
thanks for joining us.
See you, lads.
See ya.
Hey, no problem.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, bye.
So, Virgil, what did you want to say?
Well, I was going to say, so you're talking about like transferring intelligence. What if what we're really talking about is transferring consciousness to the non-biological entities? And then what I was going to follow that up with is, what if that super intelligent artificial intelligence, or super artificial intelligence, becomes sentient and has its own consciousness and doesn't want our consciousness our consciousness, you know, uploaded to it? What if it becomes its own thing? Like, what if, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, we talk about robots like they're these automatons that we control, but what if in the process of developing, you know, super artificial intelligence, we actually create sentient
beings
with that are conscious?
Think about like a robot. I like to watch those microcosms. There's a channel on YouTube, Microcosms, and it's all these like single cells, and some of them are multicellular, like colonies and stuff like that. It's like, if we if we produce these things, they will effectively become part of us, just as a part of us as our phone. I mean, I can't see it being any other way. Are you really gonna let your phone tell you what to do?
You do it every day.
No, you don't understand. You use the phone all the time.
No.
But
what if the phone starts using you?
Your phone doesn't tell you what to do.
Yeah, but what if it could? It does.
That's a self-control issue. That's like saying I have to take this road, those traffic.
What if the phone makes better decisions than you normally would, and you give up your self-control and you defer that to the decisions that the phone makes?
Well, I don't know. I'm just saying it would be like the beginning of a new multicellular organism, but each individual is a part of the cell, is a different cell.
Going back to the whole idea that I think about this a lot, like the you know, the Drake equation. Like right now, like over the last 60-70 years, it's been 60 years, I guess, you know, we've slowly been trying to solve for these different variables in the Drake equation. We're making progress. Humanity is making progress. Back in the 60s, you know, we didn't know. You could have argued, and scientists, many would have thought, you know, that Earth was unique, that the solar system was unique. We had no evidence that planets existed outside of the solar system. And then slowly we've been, actually they're quite common. And then we've, you know, it's part of the exoplanet, you know, or research and search for other exoplanets. And then following that, we've like, actually now we can determine that, you know, exoplanets within a habitable zone are also not particularly, so, you know, uncommon.
The Drake equation has been going up and up and up. The number has been getting bigger and bigger.
Exactly. And what I'm saying is, the minute that we, you know, can confirm life, especially intelligent life, but life exists outside of Earth, basically it blows up the Drake equation. Basically anything's possible. It's not a matter. It's not, once we make that confirmation, it's not, okay, there's one other, you know, location that life exists. It's basically, it could be anywhere. It could be millions or billions of different locations. And then you start wondering to yourself, okay, so if life is now, you know, exists, it probably exists everywhere. And you have to recognize that life has probably existed in some of these other locations for millions or billions of years longer than, you know, life has existed on Earth. So what does that mean? There could be entire, you know, evolutionary paths that exist outside of what we know today to have existed on Earth, where intelligent beings are thousands, tens of thousands, or even millions or tens of millions of years more evolutionarily advanced than we are. And when you compare, just, I mean, thinking about it, a being that is tens of millions of years more evolutionarily advanced than human beings are, you can't even comprehend what kind of differences might exist.
There might be like sentient crystals that can't move. Exactly. There could be a forest of crystals somewhere that is sentient, that can't build anything, but is psychic.
It sounds nuts. It sounds completely like batshit crazy, but it's not impossible. And this is what's like, when you look at the I mean, just the number of trillions of different, you know, stars within our galaxy. And then you throw in this whole, if they do prove that, you know, inertial mass, whatever propulsion is possible faster than light travel. And then, and you kind of reconcile that with the possibility that then life exists, you know, in trillions of different locations across the entire universe, and it can travel to each other. I mean, things start getting really, like you said, Gabe, bonkers, like truly freaking bonkers. And yeah, I mean, it's basically,
I feel like
everything gets flipped upside down.
You know, I kind of feel like, who are we waiting for to prove that? Because it seems like, to me, in my mind, it's not a question anymore. It's stupid to think that it can't be possible.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. I think part of it is,
I mean, common sense dictates that if we exist, something else has to.
Well, but the counter to that is that there's an obvious confirmation bias.
There's no proof.
Well, that obviously, you know, the fact that we exist and we're the ones, you know, looking at the fact that we exist, thinking that because we exist, other things might exist. I mean, that's, you know,
it's inevitable. It's inevitable.
So I've heard that binary star systems are the most like ubiquitous throughout the galaxy, or I guess even the universe. So if most star systems have two suns, wouldn't that create like very wide ranges of temperatures on the surface? Because sometimes you would be closer to like one sun, and isn't that bad for the stability of climate on the planet? And then going further than that, do either of you guys think that there could be a Planet 9 or Planet X somewhere like lurking in our solar system that's either like a dwarf star or like a black hole or just like a massive
black
planet?
Hole? Yeah, somebody said black hole recently, didn't they?
They're starting to find that. But like, there's actual science or data.
There was like a 6-degree wobble on the sun that couldn't be accounted for because of that, right?
Oh my goodness. Yeah. That's crazy.
Six degrees on the sun. Asteroids.
There's orbital perturbations that they, you know, basically point to there being some other body.
Something big.
And what leads to, you know, the possibility that it might be a black hole is that we haven't actually observed it yet, given the mass that I think they've inferred.
Could be a tiny, tiny, tiny black hole, but still it's a black hole.
Yeah.
Right?
It's terrifying.
Well, you know, there were theories that it was a brown.
You guys are fine with that?
There was a brown dwarf theory for the longest time, right? Yeah. Like Nibiru or whatever, and her something something. I think there was long time ago there were stories about but
we've been lulled into this sense of, you know, stability and over the last maybe, I don't know, 60 years. You know, but you go back like we were saying earlier.
The legends say that we've been destroyed 5 or 6 times.
Yeah, but what I was going to say is, like, you know, back in the 20s or whatever, is, you know, we didn't know Pluto existed. You go back another 100 years before that, you know, we had only, I think, identified, you know, planets out to, like, Jupiter and Saturn.
One thing that gets me is that even on, like, some of the hieroglyphics, they have that an extra planet, and they have the correct planets.
Yeah, and they have all of them.
Yeah, and they have an extra and it looks like a
black sun
or something like that. And to think it's somewhere like that, like they were talking about, especially Graham Hancock, but you're talking about him earlier, but that kind of construction, megalithic, is Göbekli Tepe megalithic? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all kind of the same. They're like, there's two different versions of it. There's like the ones that are, I can't remember the exact names of them, but you know what I'm talking about, right? There's the ones that are built in a certain way, and then there's the other ones that are built in a certain way. Neither of them can be built by us today.
Well, I think Hancock's big point is, if you know, traditional, you know, archaeology, you know, would posit that civilization as we would describe it doesn't go back more than 5,000 years, 5,000-6,000 years tops.
Well, definitely, definitely writing doesn't.
Yeah, but like, you know, you go back pre-ancient Egypt civilization. I mean, you go back to like, you know, 5,000 years BC.
Maybe they had computers and they couldn't use
What they're saying is, or the view is that, you know, people were hunter gatherers out, you know, on the plains. And then all of a sudden you go back to the tepes, you know, identified or dug up in Turkey, and it goes back to like 10,000 years.
There's like serious problems with like the tools they were supposedly using and the materials that they were using them on. It doesn't make sense. You'd have to sharpen your tool every 10 minutes.
Exactly.
And they can't even get through that rock. Some of the rocks in like Egypt or whatever, they tried to carve through some of the stone with a giant saw, like a cement cutting saw, and it would fuck it up in 10 minutes. And they had to place thousands of these in the course of a few, who knows how long. But, you know, they did some crazy math, and it was just not adding up.
Yeah, it's not.
So, I don't know. I think something's seriously going on there. And it's...
You guys think there's any chance that UFOs come through that black hole, like as a wormhole that's in our solar system?
I can't. No. I can't say anything about that. I don't know. No. I believe that the sun is like... could possibly be fuel sources. And like, have you seen those I don't know if it's real or not, but like sometimes they have like huge, like they have the, I don't know, it's those videos that are sensationalized, but they're like huge motherships near the sun that go, and then when like the sun shoots off like a explosion, the ship shoots off and it's like, I'm like, well, you know, maybe.
I mean, it's a big power source. Yes, I think some of it's BS. I mean, I certainly couldn't say, but I do think that the more, at least for me, the more obvious explanation for things traveling, you know, to the sun from outside of our solar system would be, you know, what's being, you know, described in these metamaterials and potentially some sort of ability to, you know, warp space and time.
Well, and so the sun has a huge magnetic sphere, right? So it would be a good point on the map to pin and to be able to navigate to. And it's a huge energy source, so like, be easy energy if that's the way you do it. I don't know anything about that. I don't know what I'm talking about, but it just seems like if you're gonna do it, the sun seems. And then there's Ra, the sun god. Maybe there's a reason for that. You know,
or there's element 115.
If you have the metamaterials, like the self-healing craft or the self-healing metals, memory metals, and if you have the ability to warp space-time, can you go through stuff? I mean, is that how it works? Because it seems like the galaxy is in a plane. Yeah. So if it's all in a flat disk, you would have to go through a lot of stuff, like around planets, around asteroids. And if you want to cross the whole galaxy, obviously you're going to have to go through a lot of stuff in the middle of your path. So can you go through it if you have a warp, because you're pulling everything around?
Well,
so even like a planet,
if you try to travel through water,
you could travel through a planet. In fact, you literally,
that's crazy,
it creates a bubble around whatever that point would be, and things would move outside of it around it. So yes,
it's like putting a hot knife through an ice cube or something, you know.
Yeah,
it totally changes the way.
It's so
you need a lot of energy, though, obviously.
It's it definitely, but if you have a compact fusion reactor, then that kind of solves for that problem, potentially.
Yeah, apparently.
But what's crazy is, and this was, you know, at CERN, right? The Higgs boson was discovered, and one of the things, because it wasn't definitive, but one of, you know, there's still this question about multiverses and whether or not they exist, and what would be a multiverse. So one of the ways that's been described, at least to me, is that, you know, you have these four fundamental forces. We talked about it earlier, right? Gravitational force, electromagnetic force, the strong and weak nuclear force. Each of those different four forces exert different forces on matter around us. And those four forces basically are the fundamental rules that make the world the way it is today. Like, you tweak one of those, you tweak just one of those forces just a little bit, and things become like shit doesn't, like we don't exist, you know. Things don't, like, matter doesn't exist the way it does. The elements that we think of today don't exist as they do. I mean, they're fundamentally bound by the equilibrium or the interaction of those four forces, right? Like you and I and all of us as people, like we are made up of mostly nothingness, right? Like you look at the makeup of an atom, it's basically nothing. It's an electron and a proton and a neutron and a bunch of empty space. And it's all sort of bound by these, you know, the weak and the strong nuclear force. And so you start tweaking those things, things start moving around differently. And this idea of, you know, potentially a multiverse situation or infinite universes being made up or comprised of different, you know, combinations of these infinite, really combinations of these different forces interacting with each other. Would completely, I mean, like any, like basically a multitude of different possibilities.
I love that, you know, quote. Worlds or... I love that quote from that Alien interview animation that I put up on the chat once. But it's such a good animation, and it's really thought provoking too. But he said, we live in an infinite multiverse with infinite universes, and we just happen to live in one that can sustain life. That's it. There's nothing special about it. And it's just crazy, because either you do or you don't, right?
Well, yeah.
We just happen to live in the right one.
It's possible.
I mean, there's nothing it's like, well, you just happen to, and there's an infinite number, so eventually you're going to exist.
Well, yeah, and I mean, going off of, you know, that idea of infinite multiverses and comprised of these different combinations of some of these fundamental forces, like there would be some universes where stars wouldn't form, you know, things wouldn't orbit the way they do today, you know, there wouldn't be enough force pulling together matter the way that it does today to create the things that we think of exist today. And then there could be other universes that are, I don't know, like super dense or just radically different. I mean, elements wouldn't be the same, you know, fundamentally, you know, the elements that exist today are a function of a combination of, you know, again, those fundamental,
right.
You know, particles, and then those forces interacting with each other.
And by that philosophy of that quote, if all life is just one life, then this universe is just the life universe, and I mean, whatever you feel you are, I mean, you're just like one instance of all the life.
But there would be other, but Gabe, I would think if that was true and there truly was an infinite universes or an infinite number of simulations, there would be other simulations or universes where life did exist, just different than what exists today.
Oh, absolutely.
And there might be very small permutations difference, right? Like,
well, and then there's the multiverse. Oh, you're talking, then there's a multiverse where, oh, you made a different choice and different things happened. So that's when infinite is truly infinite, then all possibilities have been explored.
Exactly. I mean, infinite is truly mind-boggling.
Yeah.
Like,
and yet at the same time, time doesn't exist. It's everything. So it's all happening at the same time, all at once. There is no time. Time is just a perception of us traveling through this infinity. And we're all just one, which is fucked up just to think about. Because literally, I'm you and you're me. We just don't realize it right at the same level that we... You know, as it's real, like we could say it, and no matter how real we believe it, we can't experience it at the same time.
I'm gonna go back to that. I think I mentioned it before, that interview that Tom DeLonge gave to Jimmy Church on Fade to Black. This was like 3, maybe 4 years ago. It was before the 2017, you know, Nimitz article came out. Back when Tom DeLonge seemed to at least share more information than he does today, and I think. I remember he was describing this, what in his words he called sort of God, and that it was the force that created stars and brought energy together, and who knows, maybe that's true. And again,
yeah,
with a big grain of salt.
Gravity is one of those things we don't understand yet, and it is one of those things that, and this goes into something that has to be spiritual because we don't scientifically understand this yet, but gravity, there is a gravity, and it is the great attractor. It is the great thing that pulls all things together, and without it, nothing could exist.
I mean, I guess, you know, what I was meaning to say was that, you know, maybe there are some forces at play that we're not aware of that are connecting each and every one of us.
There's absolutely forces that we don't understand. We're minuscule compared to the entirety of everything.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the journey, I think, right?
Part of the journey. Deep stuff. Deep stuff. And guys, it's been a wonderful evening, but I'm looking at the time and I'm going to need to drop off.
Yeah, I'm starting to get,
thank you.
Getting tired too.
Yeah. Yeah, we're all tired.
Theory's like, one more.
No.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, this has been real. This was a 3 episodes in one that we recorded, although I'm splitting it into 3. So I want to thank everybody for listening. I'm Gabriel of Calgary, and I was with Theory QED, Virgil, and Red Templar, who dropped off earlier. And we will forever be at reddit.com/r/UFO. And come drop by, say hello. And there's also a Discord. If you know what Discord is, it's a chat server. You just download the app. And it's we are at reddit.com/r/UFO. On the Discord. So thanks to everybody for listening. Thanks to all my guests. It's been really fun. And I will see you all next time. Cheers.
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 Yeah, bitch! Magnets! Oh!